What's up, guys? I'm super excited to provide you today with a conversation with Eric Trautline. He's the founder and CEO of LegalInc.com. As you may or may not know, I work out of Frisco, Texas, and his organization is one of the few that has been ranked in Inc. 5000 for their rapid growth. He has found his organization in 2014. He's an Air Force veteran, traveled across the country for those reasons. I'm super pumped, again, about this story, and I'm certain that you will extract a lot of value. Enjoy.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Eric Trautline, welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Excited to be here.
I've been following Eric for quite a while. I think he's very much under the radar, very much focused on what he's doing for the benefit of his organization, which is Legal Inc. Here in Frisco, Texas, one of the companies that have been experiencing very rapid growth the last few years. The company has been on Inc. 5000 rankings, seeing a lot of growth and prosperity. So first of all, I think that's something for me to congratulate you upon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Eric is, again, under the radar. If you meet him, just like a regular guy, there's a level of humility about him that I really enjoy, and just a great conversation overall. You don't look down. You can't really look down to me because I'm 7 foot.
Yeah. But well, I look up to you. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But it's not like, hey, I'm a CEO and you're, you know, this banker or whatever. So I'm just thankful that we were able to meet, man, and really develop a relationship. And I'm excited to really highlight your story, man.
Great. Thanks. It's been fun.
To kick things off, I would love to hear, obviously, not many people know who you are. How did you get to Texas? So I want to kind of start from your humble beginnings.
Sure.
Please.
Born and raised Los Angeles area, Torrance, California.
Yes.
Spent a few years there going to school. I was a knucklehead back in the day. So I decided to get out of there, join the Air Force, and spent a few years, about six years in the Air Force, going all the way around the country. Finished up schooling, took advantage of the benefits that they had all the way up to my master's degree while I was in, and then thought I'd go and put my degree to purpose, and that's where I ended up going in the commercial world. Spent about 10 years taking a company that was really focused on buying printers and taking them to electronic distribution. I've been a technologist all my career, even with the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And we had some acquisitions that I spearheaded, and that's how I ended up in Dallas, from L.A. to Missouri to Dallas, and finished up 10 years there, and then got this wild itch of saying, hey, I want to start my own business. And then Legal Inc. was born.
Wow. So I wonder, you said Los Angeles was kind of, the first – place where everything got started. Your education is at University of Nebraska.
That's right.
That correct?
That's right.
So what brought you to Nebraska? I'm just curious.
To be honest, it was Air Force, right?
It was Air Force.
Wherever I was stationed, you got your pick. On either schools that are within a 30-mile radius or satellite campuses. They just happen to have a satellite campus. Where I finished up my degree. So.
And what did you get your undergrad in?
Computer Information Systems.
And then Master's?
In Business.
Business. MBA or?
MBA.
Oh, very cool. Okay. And then, so how long were you in Air Force?
6 years.
6 years. Yeah. And what was the reason for which you decided perhaps to transition out or to kind of, proceed to your corporate career?
I just felt like out of the Air Force.
Correct.
It was one of those things where I finished up my Master's, and it was either – I was either commit to a year, being an officer in the Air Force. I applied to officer school, got selected there, but I wanted to keep my options open, or I started putting out resumes and feelers in the civilian world. And, one of those things where I just looked at the ROI of what the offers were outside versus staying in. And it was beneficial financially to make the plunge.
And The organization at the time that you're with, you were with them quite a while, right?
Sorry, about 10 years.
And was that here in Dallas or was that?
Yeah, so that was LA. And then, you know, I did a stint about 2 years in Missouri and then finished up to about 2 years in Dallas.
2 years in Dallas, okay. Yeah, because I was when I heard about your obviously current organization that you're running, I was very impressed because I used to do software sales, SaaS software sales to oil and gas industry, and it was focused around forensic analytics, and we were helping exploration and production companies look for missing revenue. And I felt like, you know, oil and gas industry was very paper-based, very outdated. So this was a great solution to the problem existing. And you came up with something similar for the legal field,
which
a lot of people, I would say, I don't want to say criticize, but they wishful thinking and we probably wish that there was more doers than thinkers. So how did that idea, how was it born? What was the origination? Who inspired you to do it? I'm just curious, kind of was it the domino effect, you know? Because having an idea and launching a company is one thing, but really positioning yourself to actually do it is something completely different.
With my old company, there was some industry, we dabbled in that industry quite a bit. We were on the manufacturing side. So we did a lot of the content printing and distribution of that. And I got to know the industry that way. I did a lot of automation systems for a lot of the players in the space. And I just seen a huge industry hole of there was a $1 billion market and two legacy players that just did it with people and spreadsheets and emails. And there was no products out there that were really solving the real problem. It was very task-oriented. It was very manual. It was very paper intensive. Mm-hmm. So sitting on the sidelines, seeing this huge opportunity, a huge problem, and nobody really going at it from a technology perspective, it took me a few years to really, really get that fire. And then I partnered up with one of my friends that was in the industry at the time. He ran another company, a retail company, mm-hmm. And he thought it was a good idea. And we both kind of just went at it. And,
you know, from the beginning.
From the beginning.
Yeah, but ever since I met you, you make it all sound very, very simple and like stress free. Like, oh yeah, we just launched a company. Like, it wasn't a big deal. And you're very, obviously free spirited. I think, like I was telling at the beginning, a great conversation, very articulate. You almost look like you don't stress. It's like he's just having a good time. Yeah. So where is that coming from? Where is that peace of mind coming from? Because again, launching a business, you know, finding a good partner is one thing, but I think holistically building the whole infrastructure is something different. And I think you have an amazing just piece of presence, I guess, peaceful presence.
Well, I have to put business in perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Number one, it all comes back to my religion and, you know, what I believe in. At the end of the day, this is just stuff and it's not going to be here when we're gone and it's not important, right? So, you know, it's... You know, my faith has gotten me through a lot of it, right? And it's helped me kind of build upon, you know, family is the most important thing. So outside of my faith and family, like, what really can go wrong, right? We're all going to fail. It's just stuff. It's just money, right? You could make a lot and you could lose a lot. Correct. You could make a lot and you could lose a lot, right? And so not to get me wrong, it was very stressful in the first few years. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of work and it took a lot of push. But at the end of the day, like, nobody wants to hear that. Like, nobody wants to be around people that are stressed or short or miserable. Like,
of course.
Who really wants to hear about your problems? Like, so why am I going to go and wear that on my collar, right? And I think a lot of the military training helped me with that, right? How to play mental games and keep stuff kind of from really affecting me emotionally outside. But there was a few years behind closed doors that my wife had to deal with the brunt of it, right? But I'm not going to take it and portray it and make everyone else miserable. So I just always had a philosophy is just put business in perspective to life, right? And, you know, it's just work.
It's a simply articulated perspective, but I think it takes, even for me, like, you know, when I think about work, I'm a career-driven dude, I want to accomplish things, but it's always... And my family used to be in the military too. My dad and his two brothers, grandpa was a cop. So it's this, probably that's where it comes from. But then I think ability to separate it, like, hey, the job is job, but then when you go home, it's only a job,
right.
Pays your bills, whatever. Like, yeah, you want to have a good living. But that perspective, I think, takes time. What do you think was the primary, how are you able to separate, personal life from business? Because you make it sound so simple, but there has to be a methodology in place or something that helped you get there, internally.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as like sports, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
When you're on the field and in the game, you're super intense and you're playing the game and you played it to win it, right? But when you step off the field, you don't have that same level of intensity, right? So I've always looked at it. My wife even called me Transformer a few times. And a few people that know me well,
yeah.
Like, they see me outside of the work and they see me in work. I'm a total different person, right? Because
yeah.
Once I'm in, I'm there. I'm intense, and we're there to do a job. And sure, I like having fun at the same time. But I'm probably a little more on the intense side in action in the business world than, outside of work. But when I leave, like leave it at the door. It's going to be there when you get back, right? Sure. I'm going to have to work sometimes after work and work out outside of that, right? But so when I'm dialed into work, I'm on,
mm-hmm.
There's kind of focus. But once I jump out, I don't know. I can't really explain how. It's not something that
yeah.
I trick my mind to do. It's just
for sure.
I'm able to jump in and jump out of it, So when I leave Friday, I'm shutting off my phone, my work phone, and, I'm only – well, I'll read and stuff like that, but then I'm not dialing in until Sunday night again.
Interesting. No, it's something. No, it's to me this is very, very interesting because I think for me personally, as a young professional, and for those listening, I think that's in a lot of cases hard thing to do.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe that because it's when you're motivated, when you want to accomplish goals, when you're you feel like you have things to take care of and make things happen. Sometimes it's hard to just separate that.
Yeah. And I think it came from like when we first started, it was 60, 70, 80 hour weeks, right?
Yeah.
And those were some tiring weeks, right? So the last thing you want to do is like come home after a day when you've been working a 15 hour day or 70 hour work week and talk about work, right? You just want to release mentally.
No,
and
precisely.
I think, as I learn to adapt to getting the right people in place and, having the right a more healthy organization.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those things that I've learned to do have just carried with it within time. Right?
So talk about, I want to dive in a little depth as far as your organization and what you've been doing in terms of strategies or perhaps your methodology that helped you, take the organization where it is now, which is in a great successful position. You guys had your partner, you decided to launch Forces. You said long weeks to begin with. What was it like? How did you guys get things off the ground? Did you bootstrap it? It was pure bootstrapped.
We bootstrapped it from the beginning.
From the beginning. So like your finances, family, friends, or just really?
Yeah, I pretty much I didn't even go to friends, right? So when I got further, I went to family. But initially, I went all in, really took out loans, any loan I could take, eventually cashed out my 401k, and pretty much put all my savings into this. But I felt very, very comfortable with that because
mm-hmm.
I've been spending years in the industry.
Yes.
And I knew that there was a huge need, right? I wouldn't recommend taking that much risk off of something that you just have a random idea and like, I'm going to go cash out my life savings, right? But I felt pretty confident that within time we'd have a viable business, but it took personally, I put it all at risk. I went all in on this one. So,
well, it's hard for me to grasp, anybody that hasn't been in your shoes doesn't really know obviously what it is, but imagine taking everything out of all your bank accounts, cashing 401k and putting everything in. What did your wife say? I mean, it's...
Oh, my wife got to the point where she thought I was completely insane. And, she basically said, I'm not doing the bills anymore.
Yeah.
All the mail's getting stacked on your desk and you're taking care of it because I can't look at the bills anymore because I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
it got that bad, right? So it's... But, I just kept... kept knowing that it's going to be, you know, we're going to come out of the
end.
It's
going to be good. Well, you had, I think it sounds like you had confidence because of your prior experience that kind of led you to gaining the peaceful mind, like, peaceful, semi at least, or having comfort. You said comfort. And then you said, okay, I think because of that, it's not a random idea. It's actually something that I've seen and I want to deploy it. And clearly it has paid off. But, you know, how did you guys go about, you know, from the get-go, when you structured everything and human capital? You mentioned something that was very interesting, is hiring the right people. What were your strategies that you utilized? What type of people were you looking for to really, you know, make sure that they're the right ones to help you succeed?
Yeah, well, at first, right, it all comes in phases, right? So it was me and my partner and a whiteboard, right?
Yeah.
And saying, okay, we got to build this product. What do we need first, right? We need to hire some developers. Let's hire some developers to build this product. And I was functioning as a, you know, product owner / scrum master / you know, engineering lead for a certain point.
Wow.
And then you figure out then, okay, that's probably not my DNA. It's probably to a point where we have a few developers where I need to really handle that. So then my first hire was a CTO, right? Because the technology kind of got ahead of me, and I was just kind of trying to build blocks and not having a blueprint and not using the best of breed, right? Then it's like, okay, I'd put my sales hat on and we start to build the sales. Well, how do you maintain the operations and the customer care? So yeah, I think just by default, as you start to build MVPs and put out product and get user feedback and get customers, it drove demand, which drove kind of holes in the business, allowing me to know where I needed to plug holes.
I see.
Ideally, we'd all like to have a huge business plan and strategy and funding where we'd hire all the right people up front, but it didn't work like that, right? Like when you're bootstrapping a business, you know, you're only filling in holes on where, you know, where those biggest gaps are.
For sure. Do you think that the CTO hire, for those that, you know, are familiar with software and building products, design, do you think that the CTO role or the, you know, the coding and everything else that is behind it, do you think that's the most critical for the whole holistic, you know, function of the company? I mean,
I can't say that one role is more important than another, right? Because it's without customers, you could have a fancy product, but without customers or marketing, the right marketing, you're not going to get users, right? So I think organizationally, they're all pretty important, right?
Yeah.
It was for us, we needed to build product first, right? We had somewhat knowing that we had some demand indicator over here. We didn't have a product, so we had to find that key person. And they were a co-founder, right? We gave them equity in the business.
For
they
sure.
became a partner. And really, they, you know, my partner, Ben Johnson, helped us get to that next level.
Did you – so I guess what I'm trying to determine – was the CTO just like a one and done? Like you knew the guy and or you hired him and you had, you know, because there's so many great developers out there. I think it's a big it's a skill that is at big demand right now. So how did you find that person and were able to determine that this is ultimately the component or that person too? Because it's not just their skill, but personality that will fit the equation, what you guys bring to the table as partners. How did you go about the selection process?
Oh, I got lucky. You know, I had a friend who was a recruiter and helped me find him. But I found him through a recruiter.
Really? So it was just one person. That was it.
What do you mean?
Yeah, you had no turnover.
No. I had two.
At the CTO role.
It was a hire slow,
okay,
fire fast, you know, type mentality, right? Mm-hmm. So we went through two initially where I knew, like, once we got in there, it was wrong, you know, it was a wrong fit.
I see.
Finally found the right person, and then that's when we started to build the business.
To really build the business.
Yeah.
How long did it take you guys to build a product, to build the software? And then when did you, I guess, start bringing, you know, Salesforce and everybody else that will be in the front line, you know, selling the product?
Yeah. So I've learned how to sell vapor. sell an idea very well, right? So I take this half-baked product or idea or this problem that I know that could be solved, that because I could kind of see people's pain points and I know how to connect the dots. I'm not trying to do my own. I just it's kind of a weird instinct where I kind of see inefficiencies.
Yes.
And then I'm able to kind of paint a picture and create a narrative in the story that really solves those. So I was able to generate demand just off a few partners that came on, when I say partners, channel partners, customers, up front. So really it put pressure on, I need to build a product, right? So the CTO came in, he really had 3 months to build a product because we had a contract already inked just off of vapor and idea that we were going to commit to, you know, having this platform ready in 3 months, right? So I was trying to align the contract process with the build and then show minimal viable product, you know, like it actually worked, but there's really kind of people behind the scenes kind of, you know, holding up stick figures and stuff like that.
No, for sure. No, I get that. So what, did that work out?
It worked out. Yeah, we launched and, you know, I mean, it was a very, very, very bare platform, but it did what it had to do to get us our first customer. Correct. And then we started iterating from there.
So can you talk about a little bit more about the services, you know, the efficiencies that you guys are creating around this narrative of perhaps change or streamlining certain things for legal services industry and law firms, period?
Yeah. So, you know, we're primarily on the transactional and the corporate side. The legal industry is filled with just a bunch of waste. It's, you know, lawyers charge a premium amount, right? Any type of support services that are outsourced, they just push onto the customer. Paralegal can work tirelessly. It doesn't matter because they're charging for their time. So it creates this big inefficiency that nobody really is solving, right? At the end of the day, people are doing things very manual, printing pieces of paper, typing each individual forms, you know, emailing spreadsheets back and forth, right? So right there is where I saw the biggest opportunity is taking this information and these documents, automating an engine that could connect it to wherever it needs to go, right? So just taking information from either our database or a database that's out there, and then pushing it from our database to another database or website, right? And taking that human element out of it.
Interesting.
And doing that in multiple jurisdictions and multiple states.
How the product, the software, became something that you didn't only sell locally but nationwide?
That's right. Because that's the real problem, right? If it was just locally, like people would know this form, this task that needs to get done, right? But when you start doing national type, like businesses are need to form in all 50 states because they're going to sell in all 50 states. Well, you have to go and do foreign qualifications in those states. And then you know, if one of those entities gets sued, they have to have an address in that state. And then there needs to be documentation of the audit trail of any correspondence that entity gets, right? So you can imagine how complicated it gets.
For sure.
And then there's yearly filings that individual state imposes upon Department of Revenue, imposes upon those entities, and people don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they might if they have this little Texas entity and this is the city of Frisco, but if you wanted to expand, it starts to complicate.
You have to go bigger. How, you know, I don't think a lot of people here specifically in Frisco knew from the beginning who you guys were. You know, I see a lot of focus on bringing, you know, great businesses and, you know, Inc. 5000 and Fortune 500 and whatnot. But, you know, I was surprised that not many, you know, sometimes I would have conversations in the community and I would mention your name. They're like, we never heard of them.
Yeah.
So what was it? Just, I'm curious what you did. You probably were more focused on actually doing the job, perhaps not coming about. I don't know if you guys had people in the community or whatnot, but you were so focused on really delivering to your customers, then the results really took care of themselves.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of execution, right? I'm a big fan of finding a problem, solving a problem, and everything else will kind of fall in place, right? I'm also learned that I do what I I focus on my strengths and I ignore my weaknesses or hire for my weaknesses, right? And just PR, getting in front of people, doing speeches, it's not my thing, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
writing articles, that's just not my thing.
Yeah.
So I'd rather be behind the scenes, building great product, delivering, executing for customers, right? And you know, spending my time there. So I think that's maybe a function of me, right? Because mm-hmm. I don't like PR and I don't like being in front of the limelight. I don't like being in the limelight, right? And, you know, now we got to the point where we might have to, but I'm not going to be the one in the front, right? So there's,
no,
there's,
for sure.
there's people that function that way. So that's, you know, it's just a matter of priorities. You can only focus on so much as a startup, right?
Yeah.
To the point where like Frisco, we were, you know, we just gotten funded. We finally went out for funding and we moved from Plano to Frisco. I didn't even call their economic, you know, I probably could have gotten some like deal on taxes or some incentive, but I just said, okay, find me the best building and the best deal and let's just move.
That's just
my style. Yeah. So.
No, I don't blame you. I mean, it sounds like, you know, and you said that at the beginning, very focused approach probably from Air Force. You're there, you're not messing around. And people probably that are, you know, that want to be kind of on the front line, that's their job, and I think you were complimenting them as a result. I think it was you and then Asset Panda, I think that was the second Rex Curzius, I think, if you know, I don't know if you know
what?
Rex Curzius mm-hmm. is their CEO.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was the second company in 5,000. Mm-hmm. I think it was a year ago or
yeah, a year ago. I think we've been in the last two or three years, but. Yeah,
that's so that stood out to me, and I was just very, very, you know, impressed with your progress and what you guys were able to accomplish. So talk about the current state, where you guys are now, you know, and where are you headed? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, so we got, you know, we got backed, you know, financially, right, mm-hmm. to take it to the next level. So really our goal is now to be a major player out there in the registered agent world.
Yes.
Provide a new modernized product to law firms, which they really don't have. You know, they've been using these big service providers and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars each law firm on mm-hmm. These manual services that really shouldn't, right? Product should be handling, automated product could be handling of that. Not saying mm-hmm. people are an important element. It's a mix of the two worlds, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like your Iron Man concept. Without the person in the suit,
no,
you have
sure.
nothing, right?
Yeah,
but if
yeah.
you put the person and have them drive the technology, then you got something special. So
I see. So just full force focus on even further growth after the
yeah,
backing.
New channels, right? So now we're wanting to focus on larger companies. Mm-hmm. Before we were solely focused on aggregators, like people who do individual new business formations.
Yes.
And then we focused on law firms, which is the second channel of people who do transactions and mm-hmm. Financial transaction, real estate transaction, new business setup, things like that, entities. But now we're focusing on going over larger companies that have presence in multiple states and providing their, you know, legal teams with the back office solution.
Interesting. Like outsourcing or
yeah. yeah. Well, outsource. I mean, they outsource it now.
It was a BPO. I think BPO, business process outsourcing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But it's basically giving them tools to do, to manage all their specific entities and all their filings, you know, so more going on the corporate end of things, right?
I see.
Larger companies.
Gotcha.
Because they're registered in multiple states and they have all these individual compliance items that they have to do. Really, which wasn't a focus before, that'll be our key to growth going forward.
Is what's your current staff count? I guess is it?
We're about 50 something. 50. With you know, if you count all our, we have overseas. We have a development shop overseas, about 20. We have about 35 here, between Dallas and California.
So the plan is just to scale and obviously, you know, turn the backing into.
We want to build a more robust product.
Yeah,
having a coming from the startup, this bootstrap, we still have some of the legacy.
Of course,
kind of scrappy. We didn't really have an enterprise grade product. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So really making those key investments into having enterprise grade product that scales, and then bring on larger environments that help on a larger scale.
Gotcha. And what do you see, you know, some of the challenges on the horizon, perhaps?
In our world, people are creatures of habit. You know, there's
old school.
Yeah. Old school, yeah. You know, they have their relationships. There's no incentive to change, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're passing along the fee, any fees that they have, right? So if you go to pay, if they're inefficient, if you're using this law firm on the back end, if they're inefficient, mm-hmm. you're going to pay for it whether efficient or not.
Of course.
So what incentive does a law firm have to provide more efficiency because they're charging you more for those inefficiencies? So that's the biggest barrier there is changing that mindset of saying, uh-huh. oh, no, in fact, if you make the law firm more efficient, you could actually work on more complicated problems for your clients mm-hmm. that could lead to larger rates, right?
Yeah.
Rather than them having to pay for an associate or a paralegal to do these monotonous tasks.
I got you. Well, I'm thinking, you know, from an operational efficiency perspective, if a law firm was to invest in that, they see more profit as a result. I mean, it's because you know, otherwise they, you know, spending money.
Right. Well, they write off half of the time that their team does.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, it's so inefficient that they can't bill for that, right? So they end up writing off so much time. They only bill like, you know, that in an 8-hour day, for example, they're only billing like 60% of it, right? So there's still that 40% that you have to cut the inefficiency out that could lead to more revenue, right? So that's the goal.
I see. And from a competitor perspective, as you guys found this solution, obviously for the problem, have you seen, you know, similar companies kind of coming to the rise or fellow competitors? Who's in the market that perhaps you're watching or observing?
You know, that's a good thing about it. It's not sexy business to talk
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to talk about this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't even want to talk about
no,
it.
No,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But so, and then it's a complicated problem to solve, right? And anytime you talk about either law or healthcare, right, it's the barrier entry is very high, right? Because there's risk involved, right? And so it's a high barrier of entry. That's why there's been a few dominant incumbents for the last 100 years. They've been literally around
mm-hmm. yeah.
120 something years that have dominated the market. So we've been fortunate enough to not, it's not like a new app craze where it's just, oh, there's an app for this and there's 20 more to pick from. We've been fortunate enough to, because it's such a big build and such a complex problem to solve, that there's not a lot of players that could just jump in, right? Like if I wanted to build a pizza shop, I could probably do that within a month. It's not that hard to do mm-hmm. to build a pizza shop next door, right? You can't really do that in our environment.
Gotcha. And you know, obviously you went through how many years you've been doing this now? Seven, six total?
Oh, yeah, we're about 7 years into
seven years into it.
Six.
Yeah, yeah. So if you would you do this all over again if you could?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've learned a ton. Like,
what have
I would I would say that like my ignorance, half of the reason we're gotten to where, because I look at the problem with a naked eye out of like just plain ignorance, right?
Yeah.
Like a lawyer or someone who's been doing it for 30 years, they're not going to look at the problem. They're going to pick apart, oh, I can't do this because of X, Y, and Z. Where I'm like, oh, it's just information and documents. You should be able to just plug the two things together and deliver it wherever, you know. So I look at it from a naked eye, right? Mm-hmm. So I've learned so much in this process, like a lot of failures, a lot of, you know, hitting my head on the wall and just getting back up and learning from it and pivoting and learning from it and iterating. So obviously I'd do it again. If I did it again, I think it'd be a lot cleaner route.
Yeah.
I'd do some things differently. I would do some things I would do the same, right? But I would definitely do it again for sure. It's been a fun ride.
What are some of the failures that perhaps you can share that could, you know, benefit the audience, or in the case there are some listeners out there having companies or aspiring entrepreneurs, what would you recommend for them not to do, I guess?
Yeah, getting emotionally like tied to your idea without really proofing it out, without testing it out, making sure the market looks at it the way you look at it, right? Because every entrepreneur has this idea, right? And this idea is the best thing
idea
in the world,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
But ideas are cheap, to be honest. Like, it's all about execution, right? So, you know, Magic Taxi, for example, right? They started the Uber before 3 years Uber did, right?
Yeah.
Uber didn't have the first idea. Uber came in after Magic. They could execute, right?
Of course.
Uber executed. So it's the same thing. Like, just don't hold on to your idea. Listen to your users, right? Interview more users. You can never – like when you're starting a product, or I say users because I'm in technology, but listen to prospective – interview prospective customers and listen to them. And if you listen to enough and you see a trend, then you build around that trend and keep your emotion out of it, your road is going to be a lot easier, right? Because I made a lot of mistakes of saying, oh, I think this is going to be an idea that will work. Let's just build it, right? And sure enough, nobody uses that feature. And I've spent 6 months building that feature. And really, they wanted this feature, right?
Yeah.
And they got on here and they told me, oh, no, that actually, that's not what I'm after. I'm after this over here. I would like this over here. Well, if I would have actually interviewed and learned from the customer before, I would have saved all that, right? So it's just, you can't get, don't try to prove your point. Like, don't argue. Like, sit back. You have an idea. There's a problem you're trying to solve and get at, right? You want to listen to the people that you're solving that problem to. And I think that's where a lot of people make mistakes.
Interesting. Yeah, that's it's. Makes me think of me and my wife now, we were looking at our first home, and this was one of the pieces of advice that I've received, is don't get attached to the home that's that you look at. Because you don't know if you're going to win unless you, like, build your own or whatever. So,
But it's just a house. Like, at the end of the day, like, and it's funny, you'll go down the track and you'll put in this bid and then you think that's the only house for you, and it's really not. If it's gone, I guarantee you, you'll find another house you love in a matter of weeks, right? It's just a house. It's just, there'll be another house there at the end of the road. So, like, and come negotiating, I look at it just like that, right? Like, on both sides of the table, right? It's like, this person is emotionally involved. They come back and look at my house for six times.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick on this dollar right here, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you can't get emotionally involved in this stuff, and you got to look at it objectively.
Something that you brought up that made me think about your sales strategy, because you said this is something that perhaps is not like an incentive or it's not sexy. So what do you guys do, really? What does your sales force do? How do you train them to then position you in a – obviously, you've succeeded, but how do you convince these lawyers, old school, kind of with habits that they've had for a long time, and they're great for them, and perhaps they're comfortable doing what they're doing. How do you go about, converting that to your methodology?
Yeah, you definitely don't sell product, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I hate product sales, right? But what I mean by that is, like, here's the bottle, here's the water, here's my water is so much better. Yeah. But what if I'm not thirsty, right?
Yeah.
Stop trying to sell products through your email, because nobody really cares about your product, right? So really, number one, uncover what that lawyer is doing or what that customer is doing. Like, understand their business process, right? Find flaws or make certain assumptions based on what you know about their business problem, and to uncover needs. Because once you uncover problems, or you uncover needs, or provide convenience or cut out steps, then you have something. Then you really don't have to sell. You're just like you're a partner helping make their life easier, right? And then it's just game over, right?
Almost so like focus a consultant.
On them. Yeah, you focus on them.
Yeah.
Like, don't focus on what you're trying to sell. How many emails do you get of, like, I could do this, or I have this, and that's like, nobody cares.
Yeah.
nobody cares about what you have to sell, to be honest.
No, like, it's true.
Listen, but, like, if you could tell them, like, I can make your life easier, or if I could do this for you, right, and make that connect the dots there, then you have a lot better, chance of winning.
Interesting. Yeah, very, very well thought, I think. Almost like a consultative, a little bit of approach.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which is something that I try to utilize in my career in financial services day-to-day basis. I think a lot of people, based on my experience, they focus so much on rates and things, but it's truly understanding, like you said, where the business owners is head at, where how their what is their where their operations are at, and understanding holistically how the company is working and what type of solutions then on the back end we can provide to really enhance support, right. You know, or replace.
So. Yeah, and it's very tricky because salespeople are type A, right? So
yeah, ego and everything
else. People love hearing themselves talk. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to say, like, stop talking. Like, you have one mouth and two ears for a reason. If you really let them talk, they'll tell you what you need to know. Capture those nuggets and then build a story around that. Like, but stop talking. Let them talk. Uncover. Ask questions.
Yeah.
Don't even try to sell them on the first conversation or the first meeting. Just find out as much as you possibly can and then come back with a case. And I think that will, you know.
Patience is the key.
Yeah, that's right.
For so many.
For salespeople.
It's
not going to work for product salespeople. There's many people, product people that I've hired, they failed miserably.
Yeah, because of that.
They're so used to just selling products, right? Whether even technology products, right? You're so used to selling this subscription product or, you know.
Whatever the case
is. Or, you know, you're just trying to sell salt and bottled wines and whatever, right? Like.
Turnkey solution or whatever.
Is different than selling products. You're selling software, right? You're solving a more complex problem. So just quit trying to sell product.
Most selling like changing behavioral patterns a little bit. And like,
to
an extent. Yeah.
I wouldn't say like change behavioral problems. You're just showing people what they don't know because people don't know what they don't know, right? So if somebody shows me what I don't know, then it's like, oh, I might have a different perspective.
Okay.
I only have this perspective because I don't know what I don't know.
Got it. So something perhaps that they haven't been exposed to before and you That's come right. in and you enrich their,
right.
you know.
Have you thought about doing it this
way? Yeah, right? Exactly.
No, I haven't, but I like doing it this way. Well, why do you like doing it this way? Well, come to find out, it's just because I've always done it that way, right? Well, if you just give it a shot, I could save 80% off your day, right?
So Eric is a business owner, entrepreneur, but I'm sure he likes to do a lot of things for fun too. What is that? You know, what when you're not 110 miles per hour in the office trying to execute? What do you do outside of work? What keeps you?
Well, family first, right? So my kids play competitive sports. My eldest daughter's competitive softball, so we're traveling around the nation.
Both of them? Or
no, just my oldest.
Oldest. Right?
My middle one is competitive cheer. My little one's still 8, so she's still trying to figure out. We're busy chasing the other two.
So the household is busy.
It's split. Yeah. Finally, my oldest is driving, so she could take herself some practice and stuff. But yeah, I like spending time on the lake, outdoor stuff. You know, if I'm not busy with kids' sports stuff.
Obviously you're the business owner today. What type of tools, perhaps, or resources did you utilize to help you get where you are? What type of books? You didn't have podcasts back then, perhaps, but do you credit that to your, Air Force training or you know, the leadership specifically? How are you able to learn those skills?
I'm a knowledge junkie. So
you are?
I like picking up any type of content, however I could get it.
Uh-huh.
And let's face it, every book out there, you're only going to get 5. The good one's 10% of the information that that's really good. The rest of it's kind of fluff, right?
But yeah.
If you could, you know, compound that times many books and many podcasts and, you know, I used to read a ton.
Really?
Read a ton, whether it be periodicals. I had my, you know, my Fast Company magazines and I had my monthly books that I'd cycle through. A lot of my friends, they read kind of like fiction to, you know, take their minds off.
Yeah, go away a little bit. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've just always been, you know, I want to read as much as I possibly can to help either stay current or learn new trends and see what that is. So I've always been more of non-fiction, learn as much as I can, you know.
And you guys live in Frisco here? Or?
Yeah, we live in Frisco.
How long you been here now?
6 years now. Yeah.
So I'm just curious, you know, as a resident, you know, kids, big family, what do you guys like about the city, and perhaps what would you change if you had any influence?
Oh, I mean, it's a well-run city.
Yeah.
It's definitely the school system. Love the infrastructure, how it's thought out, you know, all the entertainment here. That's a good question. I really never thought about what I would change. I would probably say planning the infrastructure a little bit better because they keep having to redo streets and widen streets. Well, why don't you just make them that wide in the first place and not do the nice planters in the middle? Outside of that kind of stuff, I mean, it's we're very happy here. It's a very well-run city.
That's awesome. No, I think I'm asking because I feel like, you know, it's a great, great community, amazing infrastructure. I think some may probably not realize or take it for granted a little bit. You know, if you've been to our traffic is really not that bad. It's really not that bad.
I grew up in LA County, so.
Yeah, so you can talk about that. And sometimes people complain about driving, you know, for an hour. And I said, go to Atlanta or New York or LA. So, so do you guys foresee for your future to be here or perhaps, you know, you may want to live somewhere else in the long term, you know?
I'd say until my youngest goes to college.
I see.
I think my long-term goal is to have a condo in like Costa Rica for six months out of the year and then a lake house somewhere for the other half of the year.
That would be amazing.
So, not so much suburban living, but we'll until the kids kind of grow up and go on to college, and we're here.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So, one last thing before we wrap up here. I know your time is valuable, but one thing – you know, I'm an open networker. Obviously, love helping people, adding value. If there was something that Legal Inc. currently needed outside of new clients, obviously, but any resources, what would that be? If you had to think of something to bring value to you, obviously, and your staff.
I would say an outlet where we could find talent better, quicker. You know, I feel like there's part of our challenge is finding the right type of talent when we need it, right? So if there's a way to connect with future talent, the huge need.
That would be the – are you experiencing perhaps, I don't want to say issues, but is this – I've heard that from multiple business owners that I think human capital and capturing the right talent efficiently is critical.
Yeah.
What is going on? Perhaps do you think collectively, in different industries that is causing for that mindset to, I guess, take place?
Well, I think it's the economic. This is a great economic environment, right?
Yeah.
So So anytime there's growing companies, right, it creates a vacuum of talent, right? Because there's not enough talent to fill the vacancies in a growing area. So I think it's just a natural dynamic of the
economic cycle.
Nothing extraordinary. Right? It's just finding.
You're not dealing with millennials. an issue.
It's an issue. Adapt to whatever the culture is and whatever the people are, right? Because without people, companies are nothing, right?
Absolutely.
So to say it's because of a certain age demographic or whatever demographic, they're looking at it all wrong.
Yeah.
Demographic is what it is. You're not doing anything. You're not going to do anything to change it. So stop whining about it and change your business environment so those people could thrive and actually propel, right, and support them to be able to fulfill their career path, right? So look at it differently, right? It's kind of like, leading from behind and the support rather than, trying to say, oh, this is wrong because of
I love what you just said. This would be great to kind of wrap up. You know, I feel so many times we find excuses. Oh, it's millennials, it's Gen Zs. Those expectations are different. This is something that they need and we don't. Well, you have to evolve, I think. You have to evolve. You have to create value for different types of employees because you're seeking value, I think. And, reviewing resumes and hiring. But I think those different generational, folks, they will not go and work for you unless they see the environment where they can thrive.
Look at yourself first. I've always tried to look at myself. What can I do differently? What can I do differently to help to change this situation or help these people or, communicate better over here? Because most of the time, you could say it's because of this, this, and that, right? But what's that really going to do? Like, look at yourself, be self-aware. Can I change something within myself or within my organization that could really help these types of people?
Enhance the value offering, yeah, from a workforce perspective. Cannot agree more. Eric, it was a true pleasure, you know, to sit down with you today, kind of hear a little bit, you know, your story that I think not many people know. And I appreciate you, you know, for taking the time. I look forward, you know, to seeing not only your growth, you know, as a business owner, but also obviously Legal Inc. and what's to come for years to come for you guys. Great. So
cool. Thanks for having me. So, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Cheers.
All right. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
What's up, guys? Thanks so much for listening to this conversation with Eric Trautline. As you may or may not know, new episodes of The Tomas Show come out every Monday. So please, please hit that subscribe button so that way you get notified when I release new conversations with very, very exciting guests. Your time spent here and, you know, to listen to the show means the world to me. So I just want to genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much, you know, for all your feedback. And I look forward to catching up with you soon. Cheers.